For those listening to KSBN Money Talk Radio who might be interested in buying physical precious metals for less than what I can pay for them, stay tuned. I have a way you can support this show and secure what I believe is the best price for precious metals on the existing market. In our first commercial break, I will explain this in more detail. And now, let's get on with Reclaiming the Republic. Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This is G.R. Mobley. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. If you go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, you can download our podcast and support documents and links. This is an educational, grassroots program designed to restore the Republic and placing the general government, or what many refer to as the federal government, back into the constitutional framework and scope of the Constitution. Our toll-free number, which we're still paying for, to call in on is 844-320-4299. However, we have Aaron Tilbury back into the studio, and he'll be back in the next segment. So if you would please refrain and just send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org, and I will pick up your emails and comments and questions. And we can discuss those maybe next week. But actually, next week, I have John Chambers that'll be coming in. He teaches the Constitution down in Oregon, and we'll have a nice little discussion about what he does and his thoughts on Reclaiming the Republic and Republic Review. That being said, as always, and as I always point out, that this is an educational show, that many parts of these shows will refer to previous shows. So instead of reciting all the citations all the time and saying all the same things almost, you really have to stay abreast with the show. That way you can garner and understand more about Reclaiming the Republic and about the historical context of the Constitution and what we need to do to reclaim the Republic. So don't forget, you can download these podcasts at ReclaimingTheRepublic.org on the podcast page. That being said, let me get into some quick local announcements. The Republican Coffee Club at 7 o'clock Friday morning this week will be Matt Shea and Bob McCaslin, who will do like a session review, and Jeremy Hood will be speaking on cryptocurrencies. And on August 25th, it's still to be determined. I haven't heard from Rob. His email is forthcoming, I believe. Anyway, the admission in is $5. The venue is at the Bangkok Thai restaurant inside the No Lie Brew House, and this is on Trent and Hamilton. And so another local announcement that I have, Councilman Ed Pace will be hosting town hall events each week at the following locations. Every Wednesday at 9 o'clock at McDonald's on University and Sprague. He also hosts another town hall every Friday at 9 in the morning at Forza Coffee on Sullivan and 4th, and then every Saturday at 8 a.m. at Rosar's on University and Sprague. Moving on, last week was movie night, which I gave the presentation. As soon as those videos are uploaded to YouTube, I will let you know, and as a matter of fact, I will post it on the Mobius Strip Facebook page for those who are my friends and or followers. So if you're following me or following the Mobius Strip Press page on Facebook, you will get notified when those links are available, as well as the postings of the slides that I use, because you can take those slides and just read through them. Even if you didn't watch the presentation or what have you, don't have time to, I understand, but you can kind of garner through these slides are telling you, because it's a storyline, and I wrote them so that you can kind of follow them instead of just bullets and trying to understand what words went along with the bullets and so forth. So trying to help educate and help get the content out to as many people as possible is critical, and that's the intent of this show and what I'm trying to do. If you want to create a special occasion or make a romantic impression, nothing says it better than a hand-picked bouquet of flowers. So please head out to Sunnyvale Flower Farm out in Suncrest. The details are on my Reclaiming the Republic page. It's actually on the podcast page at the very bottom. That being said, I've already mentioned we're going to have Aaron Tilbury back. So as soon as we come back from the break, he will be here. We'll be getting into some more details about the Jonah Project. What I want to do, because I know lots of people are really, you know, wanting to either talk about North Korea or what happened in Charlottesville. And so I'm going to talk in context to some conversations that I had with some friends this weekend. And as a matter of fact, I happened to have a discussion with some friends who actually had their wife with them. And this this friend's wife is a progressive educator, teacher. I have no idea what level of kids she teaches, but I felt baited and I knew that it was going to go into the danger zone. Because you got to understand, progressive ideologues, when they are confronted in an academic form, they just don't know what to say or what to do. And so what ends up happening is they get really upset. But she asked me, well, what did I think? And I alluded to the fact that protests are a violation of the Constitution. The framers had never intended to allow rumbles to ever occur. The whole point of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights was a restriction against the federal government in being able to restrict you from one a peaceful assembly and to addressing your concerns with government, not getting out and just having a big, huge protest, march, and shoutdowns. They never imagined that, and the progressive courts have basically instituted that so they can create anarchy and instill fear. Bottom line, this was a big violation of the Constitution in the context of the Constitution and constitutional rights. However, the interesting thing that really came to this that I pointed out to this teacher was that we were dealing with literally two leftist organizations, because the Nazis are an extreme left organization that wants to control and have a very specific outcome of control of government, as well as the Antifa wants a level of control and they want to take our liberties away from us. Both of these factions are anti-individual liberty, anti-individual sovereignty. And so they have nothing to do with the right, even though the progressives have labeled them and they even self-proclaim themselves as the alt-right. They're really a leftist organization. And so one of the points I was making is you got two leftist organizations fighting for their differences of control and what they want to control the masses with. And it's unfortunate, but what we have is we have a political warfare going on, folks. And when you want to gird your loins and go up into the street and you take baseball bats or whatever it is you want to take, the fact is that you're going to have to face what I would say is imminent danger. And there's a good chance you can get hurt or even killed in this particular case. So I want to keep this into context. Well, anyway, back to this friend and this conversation with his wife. It got very interesting with the fact that she just didn't know what to say. She just stormed away. And then when she finally figured out what to say, she came up to me and she just dropped the F-bomb and said, "You're effing sick." And that's all she could say. And then she left because she couldn't articulate an academic response, because they don't have any. They're basically trying to play on the emotions that we have to be, you know, we have to feel bad. And my question is, did she feel bad about the people that were left to die in Benghazi or the bloodshed that goes on in Chicago? I mean, this is war and people are going to die. Real quick, before I do run out of time, I also had a discussion with another academic who has two doctorates, and I'm actually going to have him on the show eventually. He's not been on the show yet, but I started talking to him about the Constitution and so forth. And in the academic and the old paradigm of academe, any amendment to the Constitution in this person's perspective made full wholesale changes to the entire Constitution, which I tried to point out to this person is it's the antithesis of the intent of the amendments and what Madison and Sherman was saying, because the amendment process, and I'll get into context with this in the next show, the reason these gentlemen made the amendment process the way it was at the end was because it was supposed to specifically change a portion, not make a wholesale change. And why is this important? Because this is about the 17th Amendment and the Amendment Protection Clause that I've been talking about in Article 5, that the 17th Amendment did not touch, but the academics have this feeling that it absolutely, you know, changed everything in the Constitution about that. And so next week I'll get into that, because more importantly, we're going to have Aaron Tilbury talking about the Jonah Project as soon as we get back. And I hope you stay tuned, because there's probably nothing really more frightening of what's going on in our neighborhoods than this human trafficking and sex slave. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back after this. All right, so we're back, and as I promised, or as I gave you heads up, I have Aaron Tilbury back with us, and one of the things that we never got a chance to talk about in the previous show was his model that he set up the Jonah Project with and how successful that is. And so, Jonah, I'm hoping that you can kind of give us a little bit of a background on the model that you're using with the Jonah Project.
Yeah, It basically revolves around, for us, as core principle, that shelter and advocacy are the necessary ingredients. And so it kind of started with us realizing that whether it's public health or whatever agency, all these different things that we're dealing with, mental health issues, drug addiction, all this kind of stuff for young people, that walking them through a life as an advocate that leads to healing required having shelter for them. And that we couldn't just have shelter without having somebody help walk them through life that leads to healing. And so when we look at all of these different factors that kids deal with in society today, what we realize is really it wasn't linear, that it was kind of like a sphere of influence kind of thing, and that the core of that was shelter and advocacy. And so realizing as we were helping those first young ladies that there just wasn't shelter that existed for them, that was kind of our initial, okay, we've got to figure out a way. And so our initial model was simply, we're going to do rescue/relocation, right? We're going to go into places, whatever it takes, whatever it costs, we're going to go in and we're going to, assuming that we're called, right? We're not just going to go kick down doors in, you know, local homes. But if we get a call, we're going to respond, and we're going to take this child, this woman, out of this dark place and then relocate them someplace for their physical safety. Sometimes that's geographically another state. Sometimes it's a safe home, whatever that is. And so our initial model was simply that. And what we realized as well is advocacy needed to take on a kind of a whole new level. Because as we were helping these now rescued and housed survivors with resource, we realized that navigating those resources was also a challenge, if those resources even existed. And so our model now is shelter and advocacy. And what that looks like for us, we have kind of two core principles that I'll talk about, and this kind of funnel fuels everything that we do. The first is transformative compassion. It's this belief for us that in providing not just resource, but relational trust to another human being and actually walking through life with them, not only will their life be changed and transformed, not only will this human being be able to heal, it's going to do something inside of us. It's going to change us as a community, as an individual. And so for us, there's this kind of, I guess the warm, fuzzy part of Jonah is this belief in transformative compassion. The other part of that is what we call transparent aftercare. And that's where our model in terms of services and resources, the mechanics of the model plays out. I mentioned we have two homes running right now. Our goal is to get a third up and running, because a third of the calls that we have that come in from school counselors or other agencies or from our rescue line are for young men. And we right now have a waiting list for young men. I've got no housing for them. I get a call probably every other day from a school counselor asking me for a place for a young man, and we just don't have anything.
So there's no place for young men to go, or do you pull them out of their environment or their dark place and send them somewhere else?
Yeah, so if, you know, here's part of the problem, and is that if we don't have a place to take them for them to heal, there's no point in pulling them out. In fact, the only really meaningful study on human trafficking that's been done on a national level was just released last year, 2016. It was put together by 7 survivors that work in the industry now on a national level and work on law and ordinance and all that kind of stuff. And one of the statements they made is, if you don't have safe housing and resources for us, don't even bother rescuing us. And one of the things that we see is just the reality of a human being who's been broken down and doesn't see themselves as a human being anymore. And so without appropriate resource and housing, And they're going to go right back to that life. Or if they're accepted into some kind of program that doesn't really meet their level of trauma or their need, they'll wash out of that program or the program will kick them out. And that's something that we see. And the issue is when the program doesn't want them anymore, we all know who does.
So let me beg this next question. How many candidates' lives in dark spaces have you had to leave behind?
I have. We've never not responded to a call.
No, I understand that. But, I mean, if you don't have a way to house them,
yes,
and you kind of have to leave them in that situation, how often does that occur? If you don't have a quantitative number, you know.
Yeah. So for us as a project, every single call we've ever got for a rescue, if we didn't have housing, we would come up with volunteer dollars and we would house somebody in a hotel with an advocate until we found another agency that had a bed someplace else.
Okay, so there's...
So we've never left anybody in a place that's asked for help. That's our concern, though. If we, you know, like I said, I got a waiting list of young men that school counselors are calling me about that I don't even know the level of darkness that some of these young men are experiencing, because I've got no resources for them. I do want to just point out there is an agency in town called Crosswalk. The issue is that the school counselors in particular, if I started taking kids to Crosswalk, they'd never send another kid my way. We have some places in town that kids can go. Cup of Cool Water is one. I'm a good friend of Mark Terrell, who was a former director there. We talk about it all the time, where the kid can go there. But there's no safety net to stop the pimp or the predator from walking right in there and taking the kid right back out.
So there's no security.
There's no security or safety. There's no advocate that's with them to remind them, nope, you're not an animal. You're a human being, and there's people around you that love you. You know, even the language, and I'll get back to the model in a second, but I just want to make this point. Even the language that these human beings, these kids, have been trained to use for themselves and one another is animalistic language. They literally do not see themselves as a human being anymore. I'll give you kind of an idea of, without being graphic, what that looks like. What they call the place that they take these kids as they groom and prepare them for the work that they're going to force them to do, this sex slavery, they call it the breaking grounds.
Just like with horses.
Yes. And if anybody's ever seen a cowboy roughly break a horse, it's like 10 times worse.
Right, right. Because the mental capacity that a horse has does not equate to a human being. Right. And the cognitive abilities just aren't there.
And that's what we're talking about. Right. Is we're talking about predators that have been trained to figure out which of these girls was actually maybe molested at 6 or 7 years old. She's ripe for the pickings for them, right? It's like a wolf in the woods. He doesn't go after the bull moose. He waits for the crippled one or the baby who's at the back, right? And that's what we see here. And so the second part I want to just get into with our model, that transparent aftercare piece, for us is huge, because this healing, it is love, it is compassion, right? And for me, I would say it is Jesus. But I will say that there's a lot of different, that those words mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. The important key component here is a human being, which we all are. We're not built and trained to perform. We're built and designed, created to experience freedom.
Right.
And when that's robbed of us,
right,
and we forget what that even tastes, sounds, feels like, or maybe we've never even seen it before. So for us, the model has to be walking a human being however long it takes through life.
Right.
Until they're able to make their own free choices again. Even sometimes it's a choice that I don't agree with, but it's theirs.
Right. Well, so I know that we're running out of time. So in the next segment, when we come back, I wanted to, you know, have you expound more upon the model. But I believe that there are organizations that you've probably ran head to head with, and that I think it's important people understand that the good work that you're doing is being actually I don't want to use the word thwarted, but it's being frustrated by other organizations that are more concerned with their agenda, as you've kind of enlightened me on this. And I think it's important that people understand that you're getting resistance on the good things that you're doing from people that only care about their agenda. And so Again, when we come back from the break, because we're just now hitting that hard limit, so please stay tuned, and we'll be back with Aaron and the Jonah Project as soon as we come back after listening to our sponsors. So thank you very much, and we'll be right back. Okay, so we are back with Aaron Tilbury and the Jonah Project, and he was talking about the model, and as I was mentioning, that there are organizations, and I think the best word is frustrations that are given to you from either organizations and or individuals and so forth, and without, you know, having to name names or anything else, unless you want to. What are those types of things that you have to deal with within your operations that, you know, are frustrating for you?
Yeah.
Because I don't think people garner, you know, how, you know, you could be considered a threat.
You know, it wasn't something I was sure we were going to talk about today. And I'm actually a little excited that you brought it up, GR, because, you know, frustration is a good word. What we deal with anyway, wading into this darkness, yeah, it gets heavy, right? Vicarious trauma and compassion fatigue and all these things that we deal with. And so you get tired, you get exhausted, you get frustrated. And probably the most frustrating thing for me as a human being, and probably for other people on my team as well, is the idea that going into a dark place to pull a child or a woman who's asked for help out and then provide them resource and free choice, that there's anything negative about that at all. Because the reality is I've searched my heart and my brain and I can't find anything negative about that. And yet there was another organization here locally that does some advocacy for trauma victims, that is a community servant, and didn't want to work with us. And in fact, we found they were kind of bad mouthing us a little bit over the nature of the rescue. And one of the things that came up was, well, we don't know if that's empowering women. And my statement was to them, and also to several hundred people at our last rally, was, look, here's the deal. That child or that woman is second guessing whether or not anybody cares about them anymore every night. Every 15 to 20 times that they are brutalized, they're wondering, does God exist and does anybody care? They see our billboard downtown and they're second guessing whether or not they should call. They sneak one of our cards that's been handed to them from another kid, or maybe they found it in a crack, like some girl did actually a month or so ago that we did a rescue. They find it in a crack on the sidewalk in front of the Fox Theater, and they're holding this card with our phone number in their hand, second guessing whether or not they should call, should text, whether or not we're real, who are we.
Uh-huh.
If somebody calls that line, if they have been able to summon enough courage and gumption to call us, we are coming every time without fail. And then we will empower them with free choice the moment that they are to a safe place.
And there's people that think that giving them free choice and their liberty. So I give you a little, because I don't want to take up much of your time, but my perspective in writing about liberty, is three symbiotic elements that they have to work together or you don't have liberty. And the first element is free agency. A person has to have free agency to be able to enjoy liberty. But the two other components are the constraints of free agency. And the first one is responsibility. You have to be responsible with your actions, with your words, whatever it is you say, you have to be responsible. And then that third one is accountable. If you've crossed that line and you've done damage, property damage, personal damage, emotional damage, where you've lost trust, you have to be accountable and apply those magical words of, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do this, you know, and pay your restitution as necessary. I mean, it goes hand in hand with, I think, the Christian principles, but liberty and what you're handing people in giving them their freedom and liberty is, I think, essential for all partakers in mankind.
You know, I agree with you. Obviously, as a pastor, you know, I look through a, you know, I don't know what you'd call it, a faith-based lens or a Jesus lens. But, you know, for me, the idea that it was for freedom's sake that we were set free, that's not my words, right? That scripture that tells us how important this freedom thing is. And I think sometimes public agencies, particularly government public agencies, can see something that is maybe a faith-based organization and immediately write it off. And the issue is, for me, how does somebody exercise that liberty that you're talking about if they're still in a spot where they have no physical freedom and no promise for it? See, the FBI tells us that 99% of slaves will never be rescued. And of the 1% that are, 96% of them will never lead a normal life. For us, what a normal life means is being able to make those choices that you talked about, being accountable, and also being able to choose what relationships I'm involved in.
Right.
And this human being has called for help because they don't get to choose their relationships and they have no freedom. Well, we're going to empower that. I actually see that not only as not unempowering a woman, I find it as empowering as it could possibly be to get her back to a place where she can make those choices and start that walk that's her own walk of her own choosing.
Right. So, I don't want to bring into, you know, the context of what I've talked about and what I'm doing, because it's a little bit different. But I think there's a similarity. And I use a metaphor or a story model regarding the empowerment of the individuals, because Our republic has 50 individuals that have the power over our Constitution. Those are the states. And so the metaphor I use, if you've seen The Lord of the Rings, and if you remember that scene where Gandalf comes into the throne of Rohan, and I forget the king's name, who is under a spell by Wormtongue, I believe is the other character, and you can see his eyes glazed over. He just looks old, aged, decrepit, because he believes he is, and he's been convinced by this evildoer Wormtongue in putting him under this spell. And basically Gandalf just has to break the spell by saying, arise. All you have to do is stand up and stand, you know, against this.
Yes. And you know, here's the biggest weapon that these bad guys have and will continue to be is fear.
Right.
There is no reason that those two Ukrainian guys should have not let me have it that night, except for I'm not afraid of them. And they knew it. And that's why they're not going to come and shoot up every house. If we, you know, one of the big fears is in our communities, well, we can't house these kids because then the bad guys are going to come and shoot up our house. Where do we see that happening anywhere in the news? We're at child 88 right now.
Right.
So the reality is when we make a stand and say, this is not acceptable in our society and we're not afraid of you, see, you don't call the shots, we do. Those are our children and we want them home. We got to make that statement as a community. And so right now we really need more men and more women to step up, and whether it's a part of our model or us helping them create their own or whatever that looks like. But you're right. Fear is the weapon they have, and we got to erode that.
Right. So back to the model.
Yeah.
So
one of the other pieces of resistance we've gotten that's kind of big for us is we're dealing with a lot of young people is schools. So believe it or not, we're welcome on a couple different school campuses. But I can't have conversations with the principals about sex trafficking. They don't want to talk about it, and they don't want me talking to their kids about it.
So it doesn't fall within their job description to discuss the general welfare of the children that's on their campus.
Right. We are being called by counselors from their office to pick up children, some of which have been domestic, sexually abused, or sex trafficked.
But they're willing to talk about curriculum topics such as health or sex
well,
education.
For me, my thing is we've been talking about slavery in schools since these kids were in elementary school, right? We talked about slavery. It's in our history book. Why won't we talk about slavery that's happening in the house directly across the street from our public high school?
Well, so when we talk about slavery, especially in the education system today, we talk about it through the paradigm or through the lens of the progressives, because if you read our history books that they're giving to the kids, you would think that we invented slavery, that the whole world existed for, you know, millennia And then when America came along, we just invented this new course of slavery, when people really don't understand, you know, the slavery had been around for 5,000 years. Slavery was a standard practice in life, just like using a belt to hold up your pants. You didn't even give it a thought. That's how labor was done. And, well, I've run out of time for this segment, so when we come back, we'll kind of pick this back up as far as the model and, you know, how slavery is killing us, folks. And so please stay tuned, and we'll be right back. Thank you very much. Well, I was just telling Aaron that I was going to unleash him from his chains because I've been holding him over here talking about his Jonah project. And I told him that we'll let him go after this, but I wanted him to, you know, get a little bit more into the model, the frustrations that he deals with, as well as some ways that, you know, we can throw maybe some ideas at your windshield or at your wall, wherever you're sitting, to maybe get you to think of opportunities that you might have in assisting the Jonah Project. So back to the model.
Yeah. So we talked about transparent aftercare and kind of what that looks like. Ultimately, it's walking a human being through life, helping them access resources, creating opportunities for them to learn how to make free choices, engage in relationships of their choosing. That's our model. So it's rescue and relocation is kind of typically the tip of the spear.
Right.
Now, it's not always a rescue. If I get a call from, for example, last week I got two calls from Life Services over on North Ash, okay, where they house women with babies.
Okay.
We've actually, I think we've relocated four women from that agency now. Maybe they show up and they figure out, one of the women actually wasn't a trafficking victim. There was a gang hit out on her, but she needed to be relocated, and we do that. So it may not always be a rescue. It could be something that's a little bit tamer. And it starts with an assessment or an intake. And so I have, my wife is really probably the best person we have at doing it, but we are training, and we've got a couple other women that are really stepping up. And so we do an assessment. And then from there, we figure out what's going to be the best housing resource for this human being. And so it's not always necessarily one of our homes that's appropriate. Or maybe the trauma isn't relative to what we deal with. And so there are times where we get calls. It's not just trafficking, but there's other stuff involved, and so we'll help with that. At the point that we've figured out and assessed that we're going to house this person, this woman or this child, that's where what we do is our model looks like this. We have a house leader or a couple that are house leaders that are assigned to the home that are there for overnight. Make sure that, heck, in the middle of the night, one of these gals or kids needs to talk to somebody, they're there. But also, if there is an emergency, right, or something like that, they're there. Maybe they're helping them with their meds or making sure that they remember their mental health appointment, whatever that is. But with each, and this is where I think that what we do is probably a little bit different and why we need so much help, aside from the fact that this problem isn't going away tomorrow, is that we assign an advocate one-on-one with each one of the survivors. There's a lot of reasons for it, but I'll just be very brief. At the end of the day, that's where we're truly going to see the seismic change in a human life, is another human being walking with them. So not just making sure they have access to a resource, but even being there through the mental health appointment or through the doctor's appointment and making sure that those services that were promised were really provided, making sure that the mental health specialist is really digging into the type of trauma that's relative to this victim. Because we have a couple of agencies like Excelsior and Frontier Health that do that. And we've actually sat there a number of times and realized that, like, this victim, this survivor now, is actually the trauma that the is not being addressed really very deeply. And so it's almost kind of like showing up for the once a week meeting, but we're not really diving into meaningful stuff and helping this human being heal. So we have to have an advocate that will ensure that those things will happen.
Right.
You mentioned frustrations a couple of times, and you know, I guess the thing is that our biggest allies in this fight have been school counselors. And it's because they love these kids too. They're out there working at a grassroots level. And many times, like us, finding themselves loving a child and then coming up against a wall where there's just no more resource. You know, I mentioned the waiting list I had for a young man. It's one of those things where there's a little bit of kind of playing with the clutch a little bit, because the schools can also be an area that could, and we're not there yet, be maybe the most impactful. I literally mean this, maybe the most impactful freedom fighter in this fight.
Right.
Because they have our children around them all the time. They profess care and love for them. They institute policies to look after their physical safety, and they provide access of resource to these kids. So we got to start educating. And that's been one of the big things for me, is that we had a law in Washington in 2003, the first state in the United States to have a law against human trafficking, 2003. We did nothing meaningful for a half decade.
So it was just lipstick on a pig.
There you go. Now 2008 rolls around, and we do a meaningful study in Spokane alongside law enforcement. And that's where we first ascertained maybe there's 500-600 of these kids.
Right.
That was 2008. It's 2017, and I'm on the radio with you as the only service provider for rescue and reload in Spokane, and one of two agencies that provide advocacy. We're the only people going to get these kids, and the only people housing them for free.
So there's a lot of money in it for you, is what you're saying, because you have a monopoly on the market.
That's right. That's right. And so one of the frustrations is obviously is with I'll be honest, is a little bit with a community that had to be aware that this was a problem on some level, because we passed a law in 2003.
Right.
And more importantly, not even the community, but the agencies are civic government agencies that were totally aware this is an issue, but don't have a plan.
So what I want to kind of wrap up with, because apparently there's this huge crack that this problem has slipped into, and you're the only one that's really diving into this. And so supporting you and getting opportunities to people that I think have resources, what is it you need? I'm going to presume that if somebody has a rental property, that you guys pay rent, but do you have the ability, if somebody came up and said, hey, I have a rental property, this is how much my rent costs, working out a deal?
We're probably a third of the way to the boys' home. And by that, I mentioned under $1,400. And so we've probably got right now about $500 in monthly giving.
Okay.
That's going to go towards our next home.
Okay.
So if, for example, there was someone out there who has a property, maybe it's even a two-bedroom or something. Right? We have nothing right now, so anything would be better than zero. And they said, it's empty right now. Maybe they've got no rent being paid on it, and they were willing to provide us some space, knowing that we're going to provide an advocate. We're not going to trash the house. This is going to be – we have insurance. We're a 501c3. Those types of things. That would be huge. One of the things that I have frequently echoed is this term Underground Railroad. And I really truly believe that that's going to be a huge part of what Jonah pushes for, is continuing to not just bring awareness, but ask for resources across the country. We've got to figure out areas for these kids so that they're in danger and a bad guy is after them. And we already know we don't have the jail space, so we're not going to prosecute the bad guy. How can this kid navigate school, getting on a bus to find a job, going into DSHS for social service, when that bad guy is out there going to hurt him again? So we've got to figure out a way to geographically relocate them.
Right.
You mentioned the rental property. That is probably the most proficient way to do it.
Okay, so there's rental property. Is there other mechanisms where people can, reach out as far as resources? Some people may have furnishings. Some people may have the money, but
yes.
Sometimes people may not have the money, but they have other resources.
Absolutely.
Like a car.
Absolutely. In fact, we got the car that I am driving for rescues right now. It was a donated four-door white Ford Taurus, and it's awesome for what we need.
So how can people get engaged?
JonahProject.org.
Okay.
And I will go ahead and just throw out our hotline number real quick. It's 509-655-7866. JonahProject.org. And you can email us through that. We always need donated goods that we can sell. There's always a spot for you. And I don't care about your skill set. I'm pretty sure when Harriet Tubman was setting up spots along the Underground Railroad, she didn't care about people's skill sets, what college degree they had. Will you help us carry the weight? Do you care to get involved in this freedom fight? Because if you do, there is a place for you at the table. We'll help you find it.
All right. So my engaged listeners hopefully will be reaching out and hopefully blessing your organization.
Thank you.
Any way they possibly can. Please stay tuned to the Reclaiming the Republic. We'll be back next week. So we'll have more Federalist Papers and citations for you. Thank you very much and have a blessed week.